How old is Rondell White these days?
Oh, God. Rondell White was 60 when he was playing.
Yeah, he's hurt regardless, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, regardless of it. His age is just injured at this point. Episode 42 of There Is No Offseason, a podcast from Baseball Prospectus, focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley, and I am joined by BP's Fantasy Manager and author of the Top 500 Dynasty Players list, which will soon be live on thedynastyguru.com, Brett Sayer, and my fellow authors, someone who may not be a hugger but is eminently huggable, Mauricio Rubio, and the man who heavily contributed to my near death in Washington, D.C., Craig Goldstein. Good evening, guys. Say hi to everyone and tell them where they may find you on the interwebs. And Brett, let's start with you.
You can find me at baseballprospectus.com and thedynastyguru.com and on Twitter at dynastyguru. Mal?
You can find me at baseballprospectus, and you can also find me on Twitter at mrubio52. Craig?
You can find me at baseballprospectus and thedynastyguru. You can find me on Twitter at CD Goldstein. That's CD as in classically distinguished Goldstein. Ben?
I like that one. That was impressive.
Thank you.
You can also find me at Baseball Prospectus and at The Dynasty Guru. And you can find me on Twitter at Ben Carsley. You can find this podcast on Twitter via the aptly named at Tino Podcast handle. And you can ask us questions and tell us about your feelings by emailing us at tinopodcast@gmail.com. So I'm a little surprised that we're recording tonight because, as I said last week, I had predicted that would be the last Tino ever. And Craig and Mike Ferrin did their best to make sure that would be the case. But somehow I was able to rally, thanks in small part to Craig's excellent brunch suggestion, and thanks in no small part to Craig's questionable choice of bathroom hair products. But nonetheless, I'm here. We're all here. I'm happy about that. And we are ready to go.
Can I ask a question before we record? Or before we go?
Matt, we actually started recording. We just wrote an intro and everything.
Actually, I'm aware because I'm actually the person who records it. So
yeah, I was going to say, you told us to record.
Yeah. My fault. But does Craig have a loofah?
No loofah. No. Just very feminine hair products. Okay. But a few hours after I called out Craig about his feminine hair products, the man orders a side of bacon with his steak and cheese sub, which is beyond respectable. He's just an enigma.
He's a complex man.
Indeed.
I'm not going to apologize for caring about my curls.
We never thought you'd apologize.
Well, the other thing is that he actually does have good flow, so it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, thank you. I appreciate that.
It's the good face. It's the good head. Well, that's weird. All right. So this week we're going to talk about... That's off to a good start. This week we're going to talk about Dynasty League outfielders. There are quite a few of them, so I imagine we'll be debating Brett's Dynasty outfielders list for quite a while in the second half of the show. But before we get there, let's kick off with reader emails. And our first reader email is from Matt. Matt says, "Hey Tino crew, I'm in a 12-team mixed with a 280 auction budget. Wondering your thoughts on a $10 Homer Bailey coming back from injury. I've got him under contract at this price for the next two seasons. My staff is fairly deep with Teheran, Cole, Wheeler, Pfister, and Quintana. Need to make a decision by March 1st that won't allow much time to evaluate him in spring training. I could do any of the following. Keep him. Drop him with a $5 auction penalty. Parentheses, I have plenty of cash. Deal him for a guy like Starlin Castro, who costs 23 but isn't under contract and is droppable after the season. Deal him for a fourth or fifth rounder in our minor league draft, 15 spots per team, and he's got 10 spots to fill. What say you? Appreciate the help and dig the pod, Matt." So Homer Bailey is one of the more interesting guys to me at this stage in the offseason. I've personally had a tough time evaluating him. I've received a few offers in terms of people trying to trade Homer Bailey to me, and I haven't pulled the trigger yet because I don't really know what to make of him. So, Craig, what would you be doing in this situation?
Yeah, I agree with you that he's a tough guy to kind of figure, and I've generally erred on the side of not having him on my team. I think the only option that's truly unpalatable here is to drop him and incur a penalty. At $10, I mean, he doesn't have to do that much to earn that type of valuation, especially since it's a keeper league and there is, you know, kind of I'm blanking on the word here, but inflation. And it's, you know, I think I would probably deal him for Castro if you have the auction cash. I understand it's not you don't get the years of control, but I'm assuming that in the 12-team mix, there aren't a ton of valuable shortstops available. And while Castro probably doesn't outproduce that $23, even with inflation, he'll probably get close to it. And I think he can, you know, it's okay to take small losses on guys at positions like shortstop as long as you get someone who puts up good production. You know, if he puts up a $20 season, that's still really valuable out of a shortstop, even if you're paying him $23. I would probably take Castro, keeping him, and then dealing him for a fourth or fifth rounder. I would absolutely not drop him. Brett, any thoughts?
I'm definitely with you. Of these options, I think the best option if you're not hurting for cash is to trade him for a guy like Castro. I mean, if you can upgrade Bailey by spending an extra 10 to 15 bucks into a guy who's, you know, a top, you know, somewhere between top 50 to 75 overall dynasty asset, then I would do that if you're not all that comfortable with the risk. But $10 is a little expensive in a 12 teamer, but there's really no need to drop him and incur the penalty. I mean, you have him for 2 years, so even if he's not all that great and still working back this year, $10 could be a pretty good bargain next year. But yeah, that's pretty much my thought. Mal?
Yeah, you know, I don't think you can really drop Batman here. So I think, you know, even if you trade Trevor Resnick for like a fourth or fifth round pick in the minor league deal, like you're still making out pretty all right. And I would definitely be trading Patrick Bateman for Starlin Castro in this situation. So yeah, I mean, I agree with what you guys have said.
We're just moving straight past that. We're not going to acknowledge it. Our second reader email of the week is from Ken. And Mao, you're lucky that you always go second because you should be in timeout 100%. You should be in timeout.
Well, okay, go ahead.
Oh no! Oh, I'm sorry. Do you have a Patrick Bateman follow up?
No, it's like what the fuck am I? What else am I going to follow that up with? I completely agree with him.
I wanted a Newsies reference.
I was going to get there. Yeah, that was going to happen.
Well, let's move forward.
Ken says, "I am in a first year head to head points dynasty league. Specific enough." We have 40-man rosters, 4 outfielders, and corner and middle infielders. I have never done a first-year dynasty draft before, and I wanted to hear your thoughts on the best approach for the draft. Should I A, wait to draft any prospects until my starting spots are filled in an effort to focus on winning right away? B, use the DynastyGuru.com DynastyGuru.com top 500 as a guide and draft prospects whenever they happen to come up in the rankings? Or C, insert inevitable response about how every draft is different. You have to see how it plays out here. I don't remember you ever tackling this on the pod before, but in fairness, I am as sober when I listen as Ben is when you record. Thanks, Ken. I think we've talked about this on the draft before, but probably not for a while. And seeing as how now we're really in the thick of draft season, I think it makes sense to address again. So Mao, maybe with slightly less convoluted references, why don't you kick this off?
We did talk about this last year around this time, and the specific question, I believe, was regarding where to take the top 4 prospects, which I believe were Javier Baez, Byron Buxton, Carlos Correa, and actually, I forget the fourth guy. But, yeah, I mean,
wow.
the way that I would probably attack this is, you know, we've talked about this on other podcasts, and you know, it's going to be a little bit of C, but we're going to probably give you a little bit of a more detailed answer here. absolutely use the dynastyguru.com as a frame and a reference guide for what you're going to set up in your draft. But also, you know, try to put as much of your own input and other input into creating a list that you're going to be happy with. And I think what you're going to end up with, because I think the needles have moved on various prospects in Buxton in particular, but I think we're going to end up with is probably taking Bryant, you know, somewhere in between the third or the fifth round, maybe even the second, depending on the depth of your league. Actually, did he say how many teams there are in here? Just at 40-man rosters, right?
I can't hear you over.
It's 12. It's a 12-team.
12-team. Yeah. So I mean, you know, probably around the third, or maybe a little bit, maybe even probably around the third round. So it's, you know, you're going to want to take a layered approach, but I think you're going to be pulling trigger on prospects, you know, pretty early, and then there's likely going to be a chasm before you start taking the second wave. But you know, that's me. What about you, Brett?
Well, you know, I think the 500 is a good general guide, but you know, it's actually a decent time from since it's coming out soon, a good way to tell people how to use it and how not to use it. You really, since everything in Dynasty Leagues is kind of so fluid as you know, with format and makeup of team, it's a good general guide, but it's not really meant to be the kind of thing where you just take the top guy on the board whenever he comes up. I mean, you could draft that way, but you're probably not going to optimize your team that way. It's just a good benchmark against other similar players and against other, you know, non-similar players. The only thing that I will say that I think is important is that, and I talked about this a little bit when I did my TDGX draft last year, is that, you know, I was clearly going for it in year one, in the first year of a Dynasty League draft, and I did not refrain from taking prospects until late in the draft. And I think Ben did a similar thing, if I remember correctly, but I won't let him speak to it. I took guys that I wanted. I took Clint Frazier. I took Tim Anderson. I took a couple of sprinkled prospects throughout the draft where I thought the values were good, so that I could use them as trade chips. And lo and behold, I used both of them as trade chips. And now I have a couple of additional offensive players that I wouldn't have been able to get at that point in the draft for 2015 and beyond. So you have to give yourself some chips to deal, because you're going to need them, and you don't want to leave yourself empty, because then if you have a really poor farm system, it's going to be difficult to deal with the owners who are going to get out of the draft and immediately tank, because they're always going to be those guys. So yeah, that's really my entire answer. Craig.
Yeah, I think I won't add very much except to say that I think C is the answer in the TDGX for me. I took a lot of players before I went 10 rounds before my first prospect, and then I think I went another 8 before the next one. But I think that depends on how, you know, what you're doing and how you're going about it. So the only thing I would say about the top 500 is it's a great guide. It's not made for points leagues in mind, so you have to make your own adjustments off that. But otherwise, it's really
good point. It's not made for points leagues.
Yeah. So otherwise, it's really just going to be, you know, how you're choosing to approach it and building your team for the first time. Ben?
Nope. Very little to add. Brett's right that I embarked on a similar strategy last year. So the only supplemental point I'll make is that, you know, if it seems a little random to be saying, well, just take prospects when they get to be a good value, the reason why you can do that, even if your strategy is to go for it right away, is because prospects are the easiest thing to trade for immediate help once you're in the thick of the season, as I think all of us did at a certain point last year.
Mm-hmm. Unless we absolutely forget, the TDTX draft also gave us the birth of the CBS blurb.
It's true. So only good things will happen if you embark on the strategy. All right, I'm going to move us to our third question, which I think is actually one of the more interesting and thoughtful questions we've had in a while. It's not saying a lot given our listener base, but it still impressed me. And this question is from Ian, who I am also going to bestow a friend of the podcast status on, because I know he's written in before and this is a pretty good one. So congrats, Ian. You've been promoted. Ian says, gents, I've been fascinated with Brett's Get the Platoon Advantage article ever since I read it in 2013. Every year, pre-draft, I think I'm going to try and really maximize platoon splits to score some value, and every year I chicken out and draft Drew Stubbs and hate myself. This year, I want to commit to both a lefty-righty Frankenstein outfielder and a home-slash-away bride of Frankenstein for such an endeavor. Also, if I wanted to send you some of our wonderful local Cigar City beer, how would I go about doing that? Ian, an asterisk, well-wisher, and that I don't wish any specific harm. Strong overall email. You can send the beer directly to me. I'll be happy to share it with everyone else. But Brett, since he referenced an article that you wrote 2 years ago now, and because this is always the order in which we answer emails, why don't you lead us off?
I love it. This was my first big feature piece at BP. And it took me like forever to write this. It was so much fun. But I do like the strategy. I think how we're going to tackle this is. Ben and I are going to throw out some options for outfielder, and Mao and Craig are going to throw out some options for the pitching side. So I will start. I kind of want to start by cheating a little bit in that, the whole point of the article was to get guys that are like way down in ADP, guys that you can get very late in a deep sort of league. One guy who I would strongly consider for a strategy like this, if it doesn't need to be an outfielder and if it doesn't need to be someone who's taken that late, is Adam Lind, who's really turned into a perfect candidate here, and he's being taken late enough that you can get away with it. I mean, he's being taken pretty much in drafts where Garrett Jones was being taken when he was the subject of the article 2 years ago. But if you're looking to go a little bit deeper, which I assume you are, and stay in the outfield, the two guys who I would recommend would be Seth Smith and Scott Van Slyke. Smith had a really solid season last year, and just no one really cares. He's being taken 400th overall per NFBC ADP, and yes, he is in Seattle, but he's been in poor parks ever since leaving Colorado. His career line against right-handed pitching is 277, 358, 481. So that's an isolated power of over 200 and a really strong batting average on top of it. And I would definitely pair him with Van Slyke. I mean, Van Slyke is just one of those guys that just absolutely destroys left-handed pitching. I mean, just to give him, last year he hit 315, 415, 630 against left-handed pitching with 8 home runs and 108 at bats. So, I mean, that's exactly what you get with Van Slyke. And the nice thing about him is that he's being taken like 600th overall because he never plays against right-handers. So, those would be my two recommendations. Ben, what about you?
I particularly love Seth Smith. I think that's a phenomenal choice. I'm going to go sort of even, I think, a safer route, maybe one with a little less upside, but one that I think is pretty sure to pay dividends, notwithstanding injuries. And I'm going to go with Matt Joyce as the left-handed side of the platoon, traded to the Angels this offseason. He is at 261, 356, 463 against righties for his career and was pretty in line with that last year. He's going to a very good offensive team, and I think there are going to be RBI and run totals all over the place, even if his contributions in average and power are a little more modest than maybe something like Seth Smith could bring to the table. I really like what he has to offer as that side of the platoon. And then if you really want to get a sort of cheap five category contributor, Ian, you mocked him in your email, but I think Drew Stubbs is the other half of that platoon. And he is someone who, hold on, for his career, he is at 328, 395, 550 against left-handers. That was actually 2014, not his whole career, but he's always hit left-handers quite well, and he'll be able to provide you with some of that speed aspect that Joyce is obviously bereft of, while adding some power of his own, and I think very capable of hitting for a solid average. So Joyce is at overall ADP of 453. And Stubbs is at an overall ADP of 368. So, you know, there's no reason to need to sort of force yourself into a platoon like this, but if it is a strategy you're really looking to employ, I think that is a cheap one that could turn into a solid 5-category contributor for you. Let's go with Mal. Lead us off with the sort of pitching half of this equation.
The first guy I'm going to take is a little bit weird because he had a 2014 that was inverted from his career norms. But I think given the repertoire and where he does his work primarily, I think he's a guy who's probably going to return to what he normally does. And I'm going to take Mike Leake from the Cincinnati Reds. Now, he's, you know, within the top 100 of ADP, so he's not exactly the perfect candidate for this. But, you know, historically, he has a 4.22 ERA at home, 3.61 on the road, has better peripherals, at, you know, away from the Great American Ballpark, although his strikeout-to-walk ratio is a little bit better at home. So I think, you know, just given his tendencies, I think he's a pretty good guy to get, you know, in terms of getting the home and road splits. The other guy that I'm going to take on the flip side of that, someone who does better work at home, is C.J. Wilson, who does his work at Anaheim at Angel Stadium. You know, in 2014, he was pretty bad all around. You know, he had a 4.33 ERA, He had a 3.82 ERA at home and a 5.31 on the road. So that's not very good. But in 2013, when you know he was pretty solid all around, he was just a better overall performer, specifically at home. He posted a... Hold on, sorry, this is acting weird. Sorry about that. Yeah, he posted a 2.55 ERA at home and a 4.13 on the road. So, you know, these are both guys who... They're both within the top 100 in terms of ADP, but, you know, if you're really looking for home and road splits, I think these two guys are pretty solid options. Craig, what about you?
Yeah, I just want to address a larger point in general, and then I'll throw out the names and try not to bog us down with numbers. In general, I would just point out that, well, the platoons can be lefty and righty in terms of hitters and pitchers. You really just need two guys who have platoon issues. They can both be right-handers. And for hitters, it's probably best if they're both lefty, because then they will, as long as they're not on the same team, you can play them at different points. And I think another part of Brett's article was that you can find guys who are good at home and bad on the road, or vice versa, and use those guys. So again, there's a few different ways to approach this, but you don't have to get a left-handed guy and a right-handed guy and match them up. You can take two lefty mashers if you want. They're going to be playing different teams on different days and potentially usable in that sense. So the names that I have, though, are Ryan Vogelsong, who is, for his career, he's not that different on the home at home and on the road, but he's also had a really weird career where he was really bad until he came back from Japan. Last year at home, he had 100 innings with a 3.06 ERA at home, which I think would astonish a lot of people. But he was so bad on the road. He had a 5.1 ERA. And, you know, again, he had 85 strikeouts in those 100 innings at home. He was a really good pitcher and really usable. And he's someone who I think I drafted in TGGFs, and I even kept. I mean, but he's even towards the back in a league where you're keeping 35 people and in a 20-team league. And so he's readily available. The other guy for me is Charlie Morton, who I've actually never liked, but again, is better at home. The Pirates defense is behind him wherever he is, but he's been a better pitcher at home the last couple years. And, you know, that's, again, just another guy that you can get really late and start whenever he's at PNC and sit on the road. It's you know, it's not a complicated thing. So that's what I've got.
All right. Excellent. I sort of like going round robin like that, but not all answering the same point. So I think to listeners, you know, if you have a question like that that you want to send in the future, it's something that lends itself fairly well to this format. You know, sometimes having four people on a podcast can be a hindrance, but I think that's an example where it helps, because we can sort of attack a question from two different sides. So before we take a quick break and let Brett break out his Dynasty top 4 billion outfielders, let's get to our last reader email of the week, which is from either Patrick or Sean. depending on whether his email name or signature is a lie. And he says, yo-ho, in my 16-team Dynasty Points League, I own the fourth pick in the first-year player draft. However, our draft is contingent on players having signed or been announced to sign with an MLB club. Our draft starts on February 23rd, which is the date that Moncada's agent has thrown around that they'd like to make a decision by. This puts us between a rock and a hard place, as if he doesn't sign, we're going to be stuck with that shithead Kyle Schwarber. Our team is built to win now, so if in a similar situation, would you A, take the risk that Moncada signs last minute, B, be proactive and try to trade the fourth pick for a nice prospect, like a Braden Shipley, Alex Mayer, or Josh Bell, or C, be proactive and trade the pick for a vet like Matt Holliday or Nelson Cruz? Thanks, men. We Dynasty owners appreciate what you cats do. Patrick or Sean. So, yes, part of the reason this question was selected is because someone made fun of Kyle Schwarber, and I like irking Brett where I can. But I think it also just does break down to an interesting strategic question in terms of what you should be trying to use high draft picks for in an existing Dynasty league. It's something that I think has been a fascinating aspect of TDGX, which is the first league I've ever played in which this is possible. So I'll kick off the answer real quick. If your team is built to win now and you think you can trade this pick for someone who's as good as Matt Holliday or Nelson Cruz, please do so. My suspicion is that you won't be able to, especially if Moncada doesn't sign, because then everyone else is looking at Schwarber or, you know, maybe they prefer Jeff Hoffman or Alex Jackson or something like that instead. And to me, that's not a player who's worth a Holiday or a Cruz. If you can do that for some reason, sure, go for it. In terms of trading for Shipley, Meyer, or Bell, I would have them all ranked higher than the sort of next crop of prospects, assuming that Castillo, Tomasin, Rodon are who went 1-3. So sure, you can trade them for one of those guys if you like. That really sort of comes down to personal evaluation. I would not take the risk that Moncada signs last minute, but what you can do is just start working on these deals now. Depending on your level of familiarity with someone in your league, you can even say, just as a heads up to you, this is contingent on Moncada signing. If he does, you know, I'm going to back out of this because I'll get one of the other four. So I think those are the different ways you can attack it. Craig, why don't you go next? Do you disagree with sort of the order I've listed or anything?
No, actually, I think you nailed it. So I'm going to let anyone else speak if they disagree.
I don't disagree, but I would just like to say that his email does allude to his name being Sean Patrick.
Brett?
I am going to say that screw all y'all guys. I think Schwarber's a better fantasy prospect than Shipley, Meyer, or Bell, so you can throw that one out. The other thing I will say is that because Moncada is such an unknown, at least such an unknown as far as where and when he will sign, I don't think it's any more up in the air now than it will be 2 days before your draft as to whether he's going to sign before the 23rd. So you have a little time to worry about this. I really like Matt Holliday. But you have to really be willing to go for it and take a bit of a risk. I mean, you're not getting Moncada anyway. So you're talking about probably getting whichever of you're talking about getting one of those Cuban guys most likely. So depends how much you like the Cuban guys. That's it.
Just a quick cross promotional plug here. I'm assuming a lot of people who listen to Tino listen to Effectively Wild, but the Effectively Wild episode with Kylie, where they talked about Moncada for a long time, is pretty awesome. If you're trying to get your head around exactly what he can be,
must listen.
I mean, absolutely. It was excellent.
Even if you don't listen to the show, go listen to that one.
Agreed. Agreed.
Yes, but you should listen to Effectively Wild. It's excellent. Also true.
It is disturbingly bereft of Enya references, but other than that, it's invaluable. Yeah. Welcome back to episode 42 of Tino. I hope you used that break to switch out of your podcast app and to start downloading Effectively Wild in the background. Now that we're back, we're going to get right into the swing of things and talk about Brett Sayer's top 125 Dynasty Outfielders list. I believe our listeners all know the drill by now. We're doing a weekly positional fantasy breakdown on Baseball Prospectus in which really the fantasy team's goal is to provide you with coverage of every player at every position, regardless of what league you play in. So we have rankings just for 2015. We have three-year rankings, Dynasty League rankings, rankings for AL and only leagues, rankings that take OBP into account. Whatever you want to see, we have it on Baseball Prospectus right now. Brett, this is a monster list. It's going to take a little while for us to get all the way through it, but just what they call in the biz as a little bit of a teaser. Stick around for when we debate Alejandro de Haza or Steven Moya at 124 and 125. Brett, if you want to start a little higher, here are the keys.
All right. Well, but why don't we start up in the 110s? this is going to be a little different just because it's such a huge list. So we're not really going to go as slowly down the list as we've done with the other positions, but we're going to try to hit on a lot of the big names and really get some opinions on them. The first three guys are great and they're boring. So I don't know if there's really much to say about them. You got Trout, Stanton, and McCutchen at 1, 2, 3. I have McCutchen behind Stanton from a dynasty perspective, even though I have McCutchen over Stanton for the current year. But where it starts to get interesting is at number four. At number four, we have Bryce Harper, who checks in, you know, at a slightly lower spot overall than he did last year. It's another year where he hasn't quite fulfilled that enormous upside. I'm curious to know where each of you guys would put Harper among this top five. We'll start with Mal.
Actually, I think you have him at the spot that I would definitely have him at as well. You can have the argument between Gomez and Harper, and it comes down to how much you believe in Gomez's legs going forward and what exactly you think Harper's going to do within the next 3 years. But for me personally, I'm still a pretty big believer. And, I would have him at four as well. I don't really think I can make the justification for putting Gomez over Harper. And I really like Gomez as a player. So, Greg, do you disagree?
I'd probably have him three, and I would probably put Stanton four personally. I think not that there's not injury risk with Harper, there's injury risk with both of them, but I think that's a long-term concern on both guys for me, and I still believe in Harper and that he can be a little more of a complete player going forward than Stanton can over the long term, but that it's a minor quibble. I have no problem with where he is. Ben?
Mal pretty much took my answer. I really want to say Gomez, but he is already 29, and I'm worried about the steals starting to drop a little bit as he gets older. So certainly in a three-year ranking, I think I'd have Harper maybe not even in the top 10, probably close to the bottom of the top 10. But in the Dynasty League, he's placed perfectly, in my opinion.
All right, so let's move down to some of the more interesting names. The two guys that I think people are going to have a little bit of a hard time valuing this offseason just because they've each dropped from their perch when they were ranked a year ago are Ryan Braun and Carlos Gonzalez. And both had injury issues in 2014. Cargo sort of has the continued injury issues. Braun has sort of the extracurricular issues as well. I have Braun a couple spots higher than Gonzalez. I'm actually relatively bullish on Braun after the thumb surgery. I think there's at least a decent chance that it works out and he becomes, a high end, a real high end performer again. But I'm curious to know if any of you guys would take Carlos Gonzalez over Ryan Braun at this point. And if so, why?
Yeah, I'll chip in as the sort of resident cargo owner. I also really like Braun. I do think he'll return to become a player who's better than he was last year, but I don't think we're going to see 40 homer, 30 steal Ryan Braun again. And I would take cargo over him. I know he's always had injuries, but specifically a lot of the stuff he dealt with last year was freakish. I mean, a fatty tumor in your hand is not something that I'm going to hold against you moving forward. So cargo is – I'd probably have Batista and then Upton, I think, then Gonzalez and maybe then like Springer and Braun or something in that ilk. So I think where you have them ranked is right around the right area, but I would have cargo first.
Okay. Should I take the silence that Ben is alone on this or?
Yep, I would have Braun ahead as well.
I would as well. Although Ben did provide a pretty good answer in terms of where I would probably rank Upton and Bautista, but I would probably still have Braun ahead of Gonzalez.
All right, so let's move down to the next guy who I think is a very divisive rank at this point, and that's Michael Brantley. Brantley was super excellent in 2014 and contributed everywhere, had an incredibly strong batting average and backed it with a tick up in power and the usual speed that he provides. Where are you guys comfortable taking him on this list? I have him at 14, which is sort of right after the group we've been talking about and George Springer and Hunter Pence. Would you guys have him lower? I guess this is a long way of saying, are you guys believers in Michael Brantley returning, not the same value we returned in 2014, but high value going forward? Craig?
Nope. I'd probably have him behind Jacoby Ellsbury at 20, who's at 21. So right around Ellsbury, Mookie Betts, Corey Dickerson, I'm far more comfortable with him in that range.
All right. That is pretty much to the T. I was going to say I would have him right ahead of Corey Dickerson, which is exactly one spot lower than Craig said.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably have him right in front of Will Myers. So the question is whether or not you think Michael Brantley's an outfielder one, and I just don't think that. So I don't really have him. I don't feel comfortable having him in the top 14. Basically what Craig said.
All right. So I guess I'm the high guy on Brantley then.
What has you convinced that Brantley should rank this high? Why are you the voice of dissension here?
I think the overall value is extremely high. I think the power is a little bit higher than we should expect going forward. But I think a 315-15 as a baseline is perfectly reasonable going forward. He's not particularly old, and he could with his contact profile and his batted ball profile, he could easily hit 310 to 320 again. And the value of someone who has a batting average that high is quite high.
I guess he could do it again because he did it last year, but his batted ball profile was almost exactly the same as it has been his entire career, and his BABIP was 30 points higher, which is a huge driver behind the spike in average. I mean, he's mostly a 280s guy. So, I think setting 300 as a base is pretty aggressive. And if you're talking about his value coming from his average in that sense, I don't know. I also don't see him. I mean, can he steal 20 plus bases again? Sure, but he's entering his physical prime, which generally is, you're not necessarily at your top end speed because you're filling out. And I don't know. I wouldn't, like you said, 15-15. I think that's pretty reasonable. But his batted ball profile was, like I said, the same almost as his previous years. And he saw a huge spike in his homer per fly ball. And unless there was a mechanical change that added, loft to his swing or something like that, I think, assuming the kind of profile you're talking about going forward seems really on the aggressive end of things to me.
Yeah, it is probably on the aggressive side. But I think he is the kind of guy who, like, he's adding a little strength as he gets older. I think that'll materialize in fewer stolen bases eventually. But you know, I think that the increase in power is mildly sustainable. I mean, he hit 10 in 2013, 20 in 2014. I think he can maintain half of that bump. And you know, you also can't discount the runs and RBIs that he put up last year. And it's an offense that should be, you know, pretty decent again. That's hard to predict year to year, but you know.
Sure. I just think that if we're ultimately going to, you know, if you're saying it's a 315-15 profile, I think if it's a 285-15-15, it's somewhat dramatically less valuable, or at least you can find it elsewhere a little more easily.
Well, yeah, that's true. But then again, he didn't go 15-15 last year. He dramatically outperformed that in both homers and steals. So, you know, if you're stepping it back, then you know, it depends how much you're willing to step it back.
Right. I was just using the terms that you set forth.
Yeah.
I am confident he will hit neither exactly 15 homers or 20 homers, and he will steal neither exactly 15 or 20 bases.
I will not take you up on that bet.
I will buy you a case of Pepsi One if I'm wrong.
that's a low blow.
That's also an expensive blow, actually, judging from the prices on eBay.
Those are the best kind.
All right, so let's go down to two, three names in a row who are quite interesting in terms of how much upside you think they have and how much upside you think remains. At the beginning of the 20s, I have Mookie Betts, Corey Dickerson, and Will Myers all consecutively. They're clearly all very different cases. Betts is all about what he could do in the future. Dickerson is about whether he can continue what he did last year, and Myers is about whether he can rebound and be the guy who people thought he was going to be. Who do you guys have tops among these three, and are you very confident in any of them, Mal?
You know, the guy that I still want to believe in is Will Myers. I know he's in a bad part for fantasy, and it's just, you know, it hasn't worked out to this point. But that's a really hard drug for me to give up. I mean, I like Mookie Betts, and, you know, I'm indifferent towards Corey Dickerson for various reasons. But, you know, I still have my Will Myers man crush going on. So, I mean, I think, you know, he's a big old strong man. I still think he can tap into that power, and I think he can, you know, provide enough fantasy-wise to still be a solid player, even in Petco. Ben, what about you? What do you think?
This is a really tough grouping for me, which to me tells you know, tells me that you did a really nice job grouping these guys, Brett, because I'm wrestling with this. I'll tell you, I'd have Polanco, who you have behind Myers, ahead of any of them. But I think I might go... God, I also just can't totally believe in Dickerson. I think he'll certainly be better than I thought he was going to be when he was a minor leaguer. But 356 BABIP, I don't see that. I don't really know if I see him... Eight bases was kind of more than I thought he'd be capable of, too. I just think he sort of maxed out in a lot of areas, and I think the power is real, and I think he's probably capable of hitting 280. But, you know, as Craig said, the difference between something in the 280s and, you know, he was 312 last year is pretty stark. So I think in the long run, out of this group, including Polanco, I would still probably go Polanco, Myers, Betts, Dickerson.
Yeah, I think I'm inclined to I think I'm inclined to agree with Polanco on top, just because his combination of power and speed can be the most dynamic. I mean, he could be a 40 stolen base guy to go with whatever power he has, which kind of goes along with Mookie Betts. I think he could be on that level, but in terms of speed, but I believe in Polanco's power a little bit more. I would go Polanco, Myers, and Betts, Dickerson. I think in that order. I actually am interested in Will Myers. I have him in a league that Brett and I are in, and I'm currently potentially trading him. And it's been really hard for me to value him because he had the down year last year, which was partially, I think, influenced by injury, but he was bad before that. So that's obviously a tough thing to do. I guess I wanted to ask you, Brett, or really any of you guys, kind of what you would be looking for if you were going to trade Myers away, or what you would be willing to give up to get him.
Honestly,
and I realize those might be like, it might be more inclined, it might be kind of like a situation where if you have him, you're probably going to end up keeping him because he's the risk of him being, you know, it's what you're going to get back now isn't going to match up with his potential or what have you.
Yeah, like, you know, you said it. Honestly, if you have him, I think you should just keep him because people are, you know, they're going to be vulturing around him or they're going to be trying to buy low because his blow-up potential is pretty high. So, you know, I think in your situation, I don't think it would be wise to trade him in the offseason, you know, especially because you are having such a difficult time valuing him. And I know, you know, I do too. I don't have an answer for what you should be getting for him because it's, you know, I'd probably be asking too high, and people aren't going to be wanting to pay that. They're going to want to come in and try to swoop in and get him while his value is pretty low and hope that it pays off. So, you know, if you're really intent on trading him, you're probably better off waiting until in the season. But, I mean, if that's the point, we're in a dynasty league, then unless you're getting a hell of a haul, like, I don't really see the point of trading him.
Yeah, Myers is sort of the perfect example of, you know, really the key in dynasty leagues is not knowing who the right players are, but knowing when to trade for and when to trade away the right players. You know, Myers is a guy who has such name recognition and has such potential that trading him when he's in any sort of downturn is something you're very likely to regret. There's going to be some point, even if he's not very good this year, there's going to be some point where Myers is going to look good and then somebody is going to believe and you'll get a better return for him then than you would get now. So, I mean, I agree. I think you got to hold him at this point. I think he's got more value than he has on the trade market. And you just see where 2015 takes you.
All right. Sounds good.
So let's keep moving down the list. The one guy who I just want to touch on real quick, does anyone have a strong opinion about Jay Bruce and his potential to bounce back after what was just a disaster of a 2014 season?
I think I'll end up with Bruce in a fair amount of leagues this year. Really, really ugly year, like you said, but he's 27. Basically, it's his age 28 season. Other than a slight tick up in strikeouts and a slight fallback in walks, his approach didn't really change that much. BABIP was down at 269, whereas it's 293 for his career. You know, he hit fewer line drives, which is not what I like to see, obviously. But just, you know, it's more relative where I can get him. He's at 99 overall, 27th among outfielders. You know, if he's still there in, I don't know, the 7th round in a 12-team league, that's when I start to get a little tempted toward taking him 8th round maybe. So, you know, I think he's someone that I like targeting as a boom or bust outfield 3. But, you know, he doesn't have to get all the way back to prime Jay Bruce to produce really as an outfield 2. So as long as you can balance that risk you're taking in terms of batting average throughout the rest of your roster, Bruce is a guy I like targeting this year.
Yeah, he's also, you know, in the same vein. I'm really interested in seeing what happens to guys like Jay Bruce, you know, left-handed batters, left-handed power batters with the type of skill set that he has. If MLB does go around and start messing with the strike zone, it's, you know, pretty famously slanted against left-handed batters right now. It's pretty ridiculous where the strike zone is on lefty bats. So, you know, I don't you know, that's a guy that I really want to dig in on and try to find more information about. But, you know, if MLB does fix the strike zone, he's absolutely a guy that I'm very interested in seeing what he does over the course of 2015.
All right. So let's get a little bit more general. Is there anyone you guys want to either talk up or talk down that is within the top 50 here? Whether it's someone who you'd be targeting, whether someone who you you'd be selling at this point. Craig, what about you?
I don't know. I'm not prepared for this. You're gonna have to come back to me.
All right, Craig.
No, that's not that.
All right. I can go if you want, because you know.
Please. I'm not prepared.
I'm mildly competent. So, Shinsu Chu at 42. I just wrote. Oh, that rhymes. I just wrote about him in A Tale of the Tape. I think 42 is a little low. I understand this is a Dynasty League format, and he is, what is he, like 31, 32 now? So it's certainly not crazy to have him this low, but I think he's a nice candidate to rebound for a few years. You know, we had a platoon question earlier. If you want to take high-end platoon guys, that's a great choice for you. But I think I'd, you know, having him that much lower than Melky Cabrera just doesn't really work for me. I get it's not really a huge drop. It's like, what, six or eight spots. But I'd have him above Worth. I think there's a strong argument that you still want him above Dahl and Gardner. I think at least in the, you know, sort of Yasmani Tomas, Ruzny Castillo area. So not a huge shift up, but I think he's a name worth pointing out toward the bottom of the 50.
All right, Mal?
You know, I'm a pretty big David Dahl guy, and my temptation is to kind of, you know, inch him up a little bit, you know, kind of put him in between the Yasmani Tomas, Ruzny Castillo. It's not much of a bump, not much of a bump at all, but I think, you know, I could probably even see him going up a little bit higher. But I like him. I think he's going to have a pretty solid year this year, and I think he's going to be a guy who develops a lot of equity over the course of 2015. So that's a guy that I just want to talk up. Craig, you ready?
Yeah, I've used my time to actually just piggyback on Ben's point. Since I did pick Chu as my fantasy player to target for the outfield this week, I just want to point out that from 2012 to 2013, per 162 games, Chu slashed .284, .399, .454 with 20 homers, 22 stolen bases, 103 runs, and 64 RBI. That's a really valuable player, and I do think having him, I mean, again, it's one spot, but having him behind a guy like Worth, who is significantly older, and while he has been extremely productive, he just had a serious shoulder surgery and is potentially missing the start of this season, and we'll see kind of how he recovers. He's having a surgery that's taken guys a few years to come back from, namely Matt Kemp and Adrian Gonzalez. I do think Chu needs to be further up in that sense. Another guy that I, you know, this is just a personal preference guy, but Oswaldo Arcia is down at 47, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad ranking right now, but I think it's one that come next year he could be significantly higher, because he really does have impressive power. And when you're talking about like a guy like Jay Bruce rounding back into form, I think we could see Oswaldo Arcia take a step forward and become kind of a player akin to what Bruce has been the last few years, excepting 2014. So those are my two options.
All right. So the natural progression down here is that after the 50 spot, there are a lot more prospects that show up on this list, especially sort of in the 50 to, you know, 70 range. So let's take a prospect who you think is primed to be a good target now if you're looking to rebuild and you don't quite have the assets to get a, you know, a Buxton or a Bryant. Who's someone outside the top 50 here who makes for an increasing asset? Ben.
So I will go Tapia, who obviously BP has been building up for a long time. But the reason I'm suggesting him is because he just destroyed low A and he's about to go to the Cat League. So you can imagine the type of stats he might be about to put up. And I think that could eventually perhaps cause some owners to overvalue him at this time next year. So Tapia is very good right now. I do think he will be good, but I think he's someone who, you know, is generally viewed as, I don't know, somewhere in the 30 to 50 prospect range. There are probably some places who could view him as a top 15 guy next year if he does to the Cal League what a lot of people do to the Cal League. So this is a great time to sort of take him with an eye toward potentially flipping him for a prime MLB player next year.
Yeah, there are obviously a few guys I've made my love clear for. One of them is Aaron Judge, who you have at 64. I think he's going to continue to see his star kind of rise and continue to glow. Another guy for me is Bradley Zimmer, who's down at 88. He got off to a really nice start. He's going to be in high A this year. I hopefully will get a chance to see him. And I think he's someone who could come out of the gates really fast as a college bat and hit lower minors pitching really well. So those are my names. Mal?
It's been a while since I've talked about a Cubs prospect. So the guy that I'm going to take is Albert Elmora. He struggled across Daytona and Tennessee last year. Really didn't show much of an approach, even though he wasn't striking out all that much. I believe his walk rates were pretty abysmal, down in the 3% range. The strikeout rates were pretty low, so I think he was victimized by a lot of weak contact, and something that Jeff Moore talks about a lot. But you know, I think that there's still enough natural talent, there's enough natural hitting talent for him to start tapping into, you know, start tapping into that and start showing it in games and really start to have like a strong 2015. So, you know, just given the makeup reports about Elmora and the natural hitting ability that he has displayed in the past in his career, you know, I think this could be a pretty good rebound year for him, and he can start seeing a rise.
All right, I'm going to throw out two names, and one of them's not going to be surprising. The other one I don't really talk about very often, but they're two guys that kind of get lumped together a lot of the time, and that's Clint Frazier and Austin Meadows. Clint Frazier, nobody needs to hear me talk about Clint Frazier any more than I already have. If he does what he is capable of in high A, he could be a top 10 fantasy prospect this time next year. His upside is still crazy high, and he's not going to the Cal League, but he's got a chance to really explode. Meadows is a guy who is kind of differently valued by a lot of people. He's someone who hasn't really had the opportunity to stay on the field and show what he's capable of. And he's also someone who I think is, even though I think his ultimate major league upside is somewhat limited, as in it's not, you know, exponential. I think he's someone who is advanced enough at this point to hit minor league pitching very well and create a tradable asset in the short term. So with that said, we'll open it up just completely to anyone who you guys particularly feel like talking about on the remainder of the list. It's a ton of names. Like Ben mentioned, it goes all the way down to Alejandro Daza and Steven Moya. I don't think we want to talk about either of those guys, but is there who are guys that are worth bringing up at this point?
I think a guy that I noticed earlier was Nori Aoki. He's at 85, and I don't think this is inconsistent with anyone else's kind of view of him. And I guess I kind of wanted to wonder out loud why that is. He's got a very kind of limited skill set, but he's pretty good at what he is within that skill set. And I feel like, I don't know, I guess I feel like he gets undervalued because because we focus on what he can't do. He can't hit for power, I mean, in the slightest, and he's not going to drive in any runs for you. But he can hit for average. He's going to steal you 20 bases or so, and you know he should score you runs even with in the Giants lineup. So I guess I always wonder why he's so far down lists in general, even 2015 lists. I think he gets ignored. And I guess I would want to know your thoughts on that.
Sure. I mean, the biggest thing with Aoki is that I think the speed is in. I think the speed is pretty in danger. I think the average is real, but he's ever since his first year, he's been pretty poor at stealing bases. He has 37 stolen bases, and he's been caught 20 times over the past 2 years. I don't think we can count on him for 20 stolen bases going forward. And he's going to be going to a park in San Francisco that's not going to help him develop any power. So I think we're probably looking at a guy who can hit 280 to 290 as he's been doing the past couple of years with maybe, five homers and 15 steals. There's certainly value to that, but there's really not a whole lot of upside there in my opinion.
All right, I have a question. At 95, Anthony goes. I am honestly surprised to see him on this list, even as a 125 guy. I know he's still 24, 25, something in that range, but really we've seen very little evidence that he can hit, and you can't run if you're not on base. So I'm wondering what you see in Goes moving forward that has him ahead of someone like Colby Rasmus or Juan Lagares, who aren't inspiring but at least are fair bets to return some value in the interim. So what do you see Goes, I guess, still having the potential to become?
What do I see Goes having the potential to become? I think there's still the potential he could be a 35 to 40 steal guy if he can get on base. I mean, I think he's going to be given the opportunity to hit. Whether he takes it is totally up in the air. It's purely an upside play. I mean, there's probably about a 75% chance that he never hits enough to warrant this ranking. But if he does get there, then he could shoot up the list. I mean, he's young enough that I don't want to rule it out. And to be fair, we kind of know that Colby Rasmus sucks at this point. So
Brett, to do a little bit of self-promotion here, I've been doing the infographics for what the fantasy team has been pumping out in terms of tiers. And, we use Pacoda projections for all that and, just trying to figure out where what players are going to provide, in terms of relative to their position. The guy that I found really interesting in the outfield tier was Stephen Souza, Pacoda hasn't projected at a 25, having a 2020 season with a 280 average, which would be, that's tier one production. So my question to you is, where do you think Souza's production ends up being in 2015? And did you have him ranked any higher in previous iterations of this list?
He's been a very fluid guy in the list. I think Pacoda is pregnant with his baby at this point. I really don't see that sort of performance coming. I think he could be a 15-15 guy. If he can prove he can hit major league pitching. I'm somewhat confident that he can, but I mean, he hasn't proven anything so far. So betting highly on a guy who is that old and has been that old for his levels the last couple of years, I think is, you certainly can do it and you should do it based on his talent. I think there should be some hesitation there. I think people are taking the underrated aspect of Souza and taking it a little too far, and the Pacoda projection is certainly not helping that. So I think 260, 265, maybe 15-15 is probably what people should be hoping for out of him in 2015, with it in the back of your mind that he could just totally flame out.
And, you know, kind of a second question that I have way towards the back end of this list. Is there anybody that comes to mind immediately for people who just missed this list?
Anyone that came, it's pretty bad.
It's a thick list.
At the end of the list. I mean, you're talking about guys like, you know, Josh Hart, Ender Inciarte.
I'm just literally looking for anybody to rank over Stephen Moya.
Yeah, there's really very Craig Gentry, Yorman Rodriguez. Oh, I mean, who do you really want to rank over Moya? I mean, there's just nobody. Robbie Grossman.
I like
Peter,
Robbie
Peter
Grossman.
Peter Borges.
Don't be.
Delino DeShields.
Well, now you're just being an asshole with Delino DeShields.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah. I wouldn't be the only one. Match him, but you know there's just, I know you want to find someone to take over Moya, but as much as I'd like to find someone to take over Moya too, because I just don't think it works at all. There's nobody.
yeah, I guess.
What about like Lou Ford?
Yeah, Lou Ford. Maybe Jason Tyner.
Wow, that is like.
Like Tramell Sledge, maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe. How old is Rondell White these days?
Oh, God. Rondell White was 60 when he was playing.
Yeah, he's hurt regardless, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, regardless of it. His age is just injured at this point.
Yeah. Anyone else have any names they want to discuss before we move on?
Greg, you got anybody?
I think there is actually a strong argument to have Enya over Stephen Moya.
I would support this.
One hit is more than no hits. Welcome back to episode 42 of Tino. As always, we will send you out with a little housekeeping. Right now, you can order the BP Annual from Amazon, or if you log on to baseballperspectus.com, you can follow that link. All four of your favorite Tino hosts are featured at various points throughout the annual, so it is highly recommended. Please rate and review Tino on iTunes. We are approaching 60 reviews, and it would be great to get there fairly soon. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com or on Facebook if you search There Is No Offseason. You can find Brett on Twitter at Dynasty Guru. You can find Mauricio at MRubio52. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in cuddly drinking buddy, Goldstein. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening and have a good night.
You guys were very cute in DC from what I could tell.
It was just actually a lot of like rolling around.
Oh.
Well, the first night was fun. We're out to like. How you feeling, Craig?
I feel fine now.
Yeah.
You couldn't have done worse things to your toilet than I did.
Yeah. I promise you, I did not.
You also probably couldn't have done worse things to your toilet than what Brett did to the end of this list.
Wow.
Probably, yeah.
That was A+.
It's got to be a really big fucking toilet to stick Stephen Murray in it.
It's like not even your fault because you're like 100% right. It's just bad.
To be fair, the Tiger's farm system is pretty much a really big toilet.
Oh. Yeah. Well, would you, Craig, would you have taken Manuel Joseph over him?